Hello there, and you are very welcome along to the RTÉ Rugby Podcast. The playoffs are here in the BKT United Rugby Championship. Only 2.5 weeks until we find out who is lifting the third URC title. The three Irish teams are still involved. One of those games is a derby, so there will be at least one team still standing from the Irish provinces in the semi-finals. At least one, maybe two. Bernard Jackman and Johnny Murphy are with me this morning for the regular season roundup slash quarterfinal preview. And the quarterfinals are as follows. Friday night, Munster against the Ospreys at 7:35. That's live on RT2 and RT Player. Then on Saturday, 2:30 kickoff, Bulls against Benetton. The winner of that faces the winner of Leinster and Ulster, which is a 5:00 start at the Aviva Stadium. And rounding off the day, then we have Glasgow Warriors at home to the Stormers. The winner of that will take on either Munster or the Ospreys. Kickoff there is 7:35. And fellas, we'll start today with Munster. They secured top spot in the table. They're coming into the playoffs on a run of 9 wins in a row. They have 44 points out of a possible 45 and home advantage for as long as they're left in the competition. And Bernard, we've spoken a few times in the last month or 6 weeks, I'd say, about Munster's squad selection and the way they're going about things with sort of mixing and matching, not really picking their best starting 15 every week, but holding a few players back on the bench that probably ensures they have the best team out on the pitch across 80 minutes rather than your frontline players for 60 and then things fall off in the final 20. I think Saturday's win against Ulster was like, it was the perfect example of why they've been doing that, where you had those four lads lined up, Gavin Coombs, Ollie Yeager, Tom Ahern and John Hodnett with half an hour to go. And there was a sort of a feeling when we saw the four of them standing down with the sideline that, oh, here they are, they're coming. And they made a massive impact.
Yeah, they did. And look, it's probably since South Africa, the tour to South Africa, where they've found that balance of making a 23-man game. To be fair to them, they couldn't really do it earlier on in the year because they had so many injuries. So yeah. It's not a criticism of the coaching. I think now obviously he's got some injuries this weekend, but he had a fuller deck to play with, and they've just found this balance, and they've needed it. Like, even the Edinburgh game, the Connacht game, like, the bench has given the massive impact. And you know, while Leo speaks about the fans every week, pre and post match, Ray Mountry over the last 6-7 weeks has been really pushing that mentality of the bench and people being willing to sacrifice maybe their own ego, not starting, but to come on and be on the pitch at the end of the game. And it's worked really well for them. I think they're getting great confidence from it. I think the Ulster game will even, you know, on Monday morning, I'm sure when they were reviewing that game, he's shown that those clips of bench players coming on and making an impact. And to be fair, I was down there with RT and I was behind the goals. And straight after half time, he sent the whole subs down to warm up. And they actually were trying to get on from about the 43rd minute. But the way the game flowed, they didn't get on until about the 48. But the first impact was the scrum and scrum penalty. And from that scrum penalty, Munster play advantage and Carberry and Crowley break tackles. And next thing, Calvin Nash is over in the corner. And like, it was just immediate impact. But Ulster obviously bounced back straight away. But then, in fairness, I thought Ulster didn't have that same impact off the bench. And that's obviously something that Richie Murphy would look to build on. But I thought, like, if you're Ulster and you're starting to fatigue a little bit, which was only natural because the game was a very intense game, and you see the Tom Ahearns and you see John Hodnett and Ollie Yeager and even Conor Murray, like, to come on for the last 10. Yeah. Obviously, they went 6-2, so they had to mind him a little bit longer than they would have liked with the Scanlon injury. But he, in the last 10 minutes, he just seemed, Munster were calm. It wasn't like it was a lead that they could have obviously got caught with, but they didn't. I didn't feel that there was ever any real stress there, which is obviously what Murray can bring.
And Johnny, like, when you're a player and you know you have a very, very, like, either a top quality bench or an experienced bench, or you have reinforcements there if you're out in the starting team, does that kind of give you a bit of reassurance as you're going out throughout the course of the game? Not so much that someone can, you know, mop up after my mistakes or anything like that, but it's more that you don't have to kind of make sure you get absolutely everything out of your time there on the pitch, that there's going to be a quality team over the course of the 80 minutes.
Well, I think it does two things. It gives you, you know, the opportunity that you can go, if you know you're one of those players, particularly in the forwards, that the likelihood is you're going off, you can go, you know, you can go fully after it for the, you know, 55, 60, 65 minutes. But also your competitive edge gets the better of you. You know that if you don't do your job, there's someone there that comes on and you're fighting for, you know, to retain that starting spot. I know, you know, Bert is saying that, you know, a lot of players and they've managed their bench really well, you know, but there is, and you have to put aside your ego, but everyone wants to start and be part of it. That's just your competitive nature. So you have that in the back of your mind where you want to hold on to that starting spot, even though, you know that, you know, this is what the team is doing. So it gives you a bit of a kick that you want to make sure that your impacts are very, very important on the game for the time you're on the pitch. One, that you can hold on the jersey, but two, that you can, when you're slapping hands when someone else is coming up, that they know that they have to fit into your role as well as you have done it, and probably raise it even a bit more. So it just creates that competitiveness within the squad, and very much on that match day for that 50, 60, 70 minutes.
You both obviously mentioned there, so like for a couple of players, you have to park your ego if you're going to be part of this impact replacement kind of bench. Someone I'd like to name check in that, Bernard, is Gavin Coombs, who for probably 4 years now, you would have said was nailed on starter number 8 for Munster and had been up until the Northampton game this year. Now, he's still played every single game this season, but is he a great example of a person who has had to sacrifice his own self for the sake of the team, where obviously he's been told that it's for the better of the team that we keep you back until a little bit later on in the game? And it's not necessarily because you're not good enough, it's because we think we can get a better impact out of you in these final 30 minutes or something like that. And they are getting the impact. He scored 2 tries in the last few games as well. He still played every game this season. And then throw in maybe last year or at times this season where he's had to go into the second row and do a job and remove himself from some of the stuff that, you know, the attention grabbing stuff that we see from him, where he's out in wider channels and getting a chance to score tries. He's someone who's not just in these last few weeks, but probably over the course of the last couple of seasons has sacrificed himself a little bit for the sake of the team.
Yeah, I have massive admiration for Gavin Coombs, and not just his willingness to be on the bench. I think go back to like probably his early days, it all came quite easy to him because he's a brilliant athlete and he was in the team and he was scoring tries, etc. And then he had a little bit of a setback where, if you remember that game against Ireland A in the RDS, you know, where he was kind of the fall guy, which, you know, I don't think that was fair either, but he was the fall guy. And to be fair, he's in an area where Ireland are stacked in the back row. So he went away. I think the feedback was, you know, work rate. And I think we've seen that improve massively. But yet he couldn't get his way back into the Irish team. There wasn't any word out. He just kept doing his job. And then, as you say, over recent times, he has taken that role of being an impacted player off the bench, and again coming on and actually, you know, egoless and just doing it really well, like, in fairness. And ironically, you know, it's not what he would want, but that if he can create a reputation of being a really strong impact player at the moment, that might be an avenue into Andy Farrell's selection, more so than being a starter, if you get me. So I'm sure that's not what he wants. But the South Africans, in fairness, like, I spoke to Jack Nienaber about how they got these amazing players to buy into this idea that you're not guaranteed to start. And in actual fact, it was so deep in the South African culture was, you know, Razzie Erasmus and Nienaber used to say, look, here's a 23. We don't care who starts. You decide, you know what I mean? Which is a million miles away from anything I ever saw in a dressing room. But it's this idea of, well, do you want to be on the pitch at the start, which historically we all have, or do you want to be on at the end? And like, if you were the guy, if you were the players that were replaced on Saturday, on Friday night in Tolland Park, or Saturday night, like, you're on the bench there for the last 30 minutes. It's out of your control. You know, you're out of your control. You know, you started the game, but when you left the pitch, the game was in the balance. And at least those bench players, they were in control of what happened at the end. And like, so it's a different mindset. But I think what Roundtree and his coaches have done is they've sold as well, and they've had players who have really put the province first, and now they're in a position where, you know, they have the advantage of obviously being top seed, playing the weaker teams theoretically, and obviously for Munster fans and Munster players' point of view, hopefully a home final, which would be an incredible occasion, you know, in on the 22nd of June.
I just to pick up on that, I think what Bert said is really important there, the sell or whatever you want to call it in terms of getting players buy-in. That's incredible from, you know, a coaching perspective to be able to do that. And guys, so their level of communication that they've got, their, you know, that they've pushed why they're doing this across, and that every player in that squad has understands every role. So the clarity that they're getting in that, and that gives them the opportunity just to go out and, you know, gives them the belief, you know. So that's an incredible thing, where there was all this kind of different things throughout the season. Oh, Munster's not a happy camp. There's different, you know, and I think that kind of puts that to bed, given what, you know, there was a lot of stuff off field with Frisch and all that, and different people were, you know, coming out and say that it's not that great. But I think they galvanized themselves on that tour to South Africa, exactly like they did last year. And it all stems back to that win that they had out there with the bench. It was clear that this was their tactic. They spent two good weeks together out there, and they really kicked on. So I think that's a credit to each and every one of the coaching staff about how they've done it. And you look back now and, you know, the injuries that they suffered throughout the season, particularly around Christmas time, and they had to bring in a couple of players from the AIL. They've actually, you know, they've expanded their squad, and that's given them an opportunity to do that. The amount of players they've used over the season, their net is wider. And, you know, I think that's, you know, it obviously wasn't planned for them, given how difficult it was, how many injuries they did have, but it probably has grown their squad, and they found out players that maybe they were touch and go whether they could play, you know, URC. So yeah, I think it's been a real kind of coaching feat, you know, as well as players buying in. But to get the players buying in, the coaches have to make sure that their messages are clearly understood and that everyone gets it.
Absolutely.
Just on that, Johnny and Neil, like, look, at I was one of the people who said it wasn't happy camp, but I don't think that's like, if Johnny's been in a professional environment as well, that often is the case. It's not the end of the world. It's how you handle it. You know what I mean? And the reasons Munster wouldn't have been happy camp was, were pretty valid. Their early season form was poor. Their injury list was massive. They lost RG Snyman. Peter Mahoney and Conor Murray's contracts took a long time to get sorted out. They've had the Frisch incident, which is now obviously sorted out. The Zeebo, there's clarity now about his future. They've signed Abrahams. Kilcoyne was being let go, or had been offered a contract. Now he has. So, like, those things have fallen into, they've getting sorted week by week, which is really good. And also, it helps when you're winning. So, like you know, you can talk about our impact off the bench, and of course, it's important, and every team will want to have that, but, you know, it's much harder to sell it on a Monday morning after a loss. You know what I mean? So that feel-good factor. So I would give massive credit to the Munster squad and the Munster coaches for not letting the off-field stuff affect them getting their rugby right, which is what your professional players are supposed to do, are paid to do. And it's an easy thing to say, but Munster have done it. But, like, there's lots of teams around in every sport. Man United, my own team, useless this year, lots of tension, unhappy camp, but they managed to get a trophy at the end because certain players, whether young or old, you know, got put the team first and had a performance. And that's often the case. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to lose. It's how you handle it is the key. And Munster have handled it incredibly well.
So it's going to be a little bit trickier now this week for them to get that bench impact, because Joey Carberry thumb injury, potentially that's him done for the season and potentially him done in a Munster shirt. Rory Scannell has had to go get surgery on that awful looking ankle injury. Alex Nankivell still isn't going to be back from his ankle issue, and Tom Ahern then as well, it looks like he's potentially done for the season, and potentially a tour of South Africa, Johnny, which it looked like he was probably quite close to making.
Yeah, I think he's been, you know, he's been one of the guys that has really stood up, and you know, Birch has spoken about it during the week. You know, he's one of those sixes, those four sixes that Birch has mentioned throughout the week. Like, his athleticism is just incredible, and we've spoken about the type of players that they can give, you know, their point of difference in those wide channels, how most of the provinces are set up from an attacking perspective, what he gives in those wider channels, but also his physicality in the carry, also defensively. And it's clear, even though he's one of the younger guys, he's one of the guys that is, you know, he's very vocal in his body language at moments. So he's a real energy driver on the pitch. I presume that follows off pitch as well. But, you know, he's an integral part of what they're, you know, of what they're built around and what they have been built around this season. And so that's very frustrating for him. Just one thing on Joey Carberry, I think the last couple of weeks he's had a huge impact off the bench. You look at that try that they scored off the penalty advantage. I think, like I wrote down in my notes, that's everything good about Munster. You know, they play the advantage, they get to the middle, they go back to width, they do everything that they've been good at all year. A lot of players play, a lot of teams will kind of tip on, they tip underneath. Crowley gets go forward, Carberry gets go forward, and then you've two wingers side by side. So Nash scored, but you know, Daly's worked off his far wing to get inside Nash, but Joey Carberry has the, you know, he was integral to that passage of play. And I think he was just, you know, he's just playing with that freedom, given he knows what's going on. And it was just an opportunity to close out a chapter. And I think that's, you know, personally, that's really disappointing for Joey if it is his last performance. But yeah, you know, they are big injuries. Coming into the knockout stage is not to have if they are both, and obviously, as I said, Nankyville potentially going to be unavailable as well.
And then Bernard, I'll finish up talking about Munster on Jack Crowley specifically, because Saturday was a strange game for him. It was a day, because a lot of young out halves probably have to go through at some point, where for the first probably guts of an hour, basically nothing went right for him. He had a penalty kick that missed touch. He had a kick from play that went out in the full, then gives away a penalty in the lead up to the first try, the first Ulster try. Then for the second Ulster try, obviously he kicks that goal line dropout straight out into touch, gives away another penalty early in the second half, the one where John Cooney hits the post from. But in fairness to him, he found himself in a hole and for the last 20 minutes did manage to pull himself out of it.
Yeah, and look at that. That's all good tens. Have those days, and like he'll be just absolutely delighted that when he reviewed that game, it was on the back of a win, and he played a part in that last period where he's playing centre, of having some big moments. But I wouldn't worry about it. Look, I think it was quite a few errors from him, which are untypical. But I think what we really admire about him is that he is that, you know, resilient character, and he doesn't shy away from it. He doesn't shy away from it. In actual fact, the one before halftime, was probably just an insight into his mindset. He just wants to get into the dressing room because he's probably pissed off with how they played. Just on Tom Ahern, like, he actually picked up that injury in his first carry down the left hand side from that try, and he was limping for the whole game. But obviously, he couldn't come off because, you know, they'd already used their bench, but like, he stayed on and obviously had a big role to play in Munster winning, but may now have ruled out from, you know, the word is it's an injury that will be very difficult for him to get back before the end of the season and obviously the tour. So but yeah, just going back to him, he's obviously from Waterford. He reminds me of John Milan, the Waterford hurler. Like, he celebrates with real passion and emotion, and he's a fella that you just, when you watch him play, by what he does and how he reacts to good moments, you're saying, oh, he's really enjoying playing for his province. You know what I mean? Don Milan's thing was, I love my county. He might be, I love my province, but if he is out for the tour, I think he definitely would have been thereabouts for sure.
I'm not sure is there a physical resemblance there, but I'll look out for the characteristics next time I watch them. On the Ospreys then, before we move on to Leinster Ulster, on the Ospreys specifically, snuck through the back door into these playoffs after Edinburgh were stuffed by Benetton. So Ospreys just needed that bonus point to win against Cardiff and they went and got it. I saw them a few weeks ago at the RDS where they played Leinster and like, look, they were hammered in the end. But in that first half, they landed their fair share of punches. And Munster, Johnny, aren't going to be lulled into a false sense of security here because they only have to go back to that game against March against the Ospreys in Swansea, where granted Munster came away with a bonus point win, but Munster had 38% possession and 28% territory in that match. Their scrum got absolutely battered and they scored, was it 3 tries in the first 10 minutes? 2 of those were intercept tries scored by Sean O'Brien. It was as close to a smash and grab victory as you're possibly going to get. So they know how much of a game they were given out there last time and they know what sort of a game they're going to be expecting this week.
Yeah, and like Toby Booth, we've spoken about coaches and stuff. Like Toby Booth's been around a long time, very shrewd operator. You know, he started already, you know, during the week, there's quotes around him that like, you know, Munster are the best team in the league. They finished top. You know, he's like, despite what other people in the, you know, in other provinces are in Ireland. So he's, you know, he's done incredibly well for them to get in with the resources and where Welsh rugby is at. I think it's a real credit to him and to the players that, you know, they managed to get in. So yeah, they'll have a clear game plan. And obviously with these injuries, they'll probably think they're going to come and it's a free shot for them. You know, they had a tiny percentage chance of getting into the playoffs. So, you know, before first ball was kicked on Friday night. So yeah, it's a free shot. They're going to come and play. And as I said, with those injuries, they certainly they'll see themselves as having a proper squeak.
It is a big one for the Ospreys and Welsh rugby just to be there and be involved, Bernard, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And look, it's been a tough couple of years in Welsh regional rugby, and it might not get better. There's a big strategic review that's being published in June. A lot of talk about going to three regions as soon as possible, just to try and make them financially more viable or more vibrant. I do think, look, it's great what the Ospreys have done. I have massive admiration for Toby Booth, but like, there's probably 10 points there that they got handier than everybody else by the nature of the fact that they played the Welsh regions twice. I mean, it's certainly the weakest. Even, yeah, historically you would have said, oh, the Scots and the Italians being matched up together, that's a big advantage, but Treviso are back to where they were. So it's the Welsh, I don't know what to even call it anymore, the Welsh pool as such and the nature of. So from a Connacht point of view, Connacht having to play Ulster twice, Leinster twice and Munster twice, yeah, it's far easier than the Ospreys having to play the Dragons, Cardiff and Scarlets. But it is what it is and they snuck in and it's a great draw for Munster, to be fair. I agree with you. They were very competitive over there. They haven't got a good scrum, but it's the ideal game for Munster at home to the weakest team on standings, but also you would say the weakest team on paper as well.
Right. Well, that is 7:35 on Friday evening. Hopefully, Bernard hasn't put the mockers on Munster there now. Let's talk Leinster and Ulster at Aviva Stadium, 5 o'clock Saturday evening. After the Ulster-Munster match on Saturday, Johnny, we were at Thomond Park and we were asking Richie Murphy about his thoughts ahead of this game against Leinster now. And he said no one was going to give Ulster a shot this week. It was going to be a free hit for them. And he struggled not to break out into a little crack of a smile after he said that. I know what you were saying with Toby Booth as well there a few minutes ago, where he's saying, oh, sure, Munster, the best team in the league, whatever. He knew exactly what he was doing, giving it the no one's going to give us a shot. But in fairness, it is ultimately a bit of a free shot for Ulster this week. They've got their Champions Cup rugby secure. They don't need to worry about who could possibly go on and win the URC and take that place away from them. They put in a pretty decent performance against Munster. And had it not been for, we'll say, losing 2 second rows in the first 15 minutes, who knows, they could have been able to hold on a little bit longer there and come away with a win. They're in a good spot. Their confidence is up. They just have to treat this as a free hit, surely.
Yeah, definitely. Like, and I think we spoke about kind of people being unhappy, you know, with everything off pitch. I think the security that we spoke about this before, that, you know, Richie on a 2-year deal, Jimmy Duffy coming in, you know, they've released some new signings. And then most importantly, Bertrand's already said it, they started to win a few games. They started to play better. They've been in, you know, they were on, you know, as you say, they were unlucky with injuries pre-game and then in-game this weekend. But exactly. And Richie has worked within Leinster, with Leo, Ireland. He's going to know so many. He's going to know a lot of those players inside out. And exactly, they're going to go down and just give it a whirl. And it's a complete free shot. They have a... you know, and they'll go down with the performance that they put in this weekend. They'll go down confident that they can put in another performance like that. And if they do, it's going to be a very tight game.
And I know, Bernard, as well, like, the Leinster are obviously going to have more of those frontline players back in the team this week, you'd imagine. But these Ulster players are going to know we've beaten these fellas twice already this season. I know it's probably going to be a stronger Leinster team on paper, but there's no reason why their confidence is going to be in any way dented heading down to Dublin.
No, I think Ulster would even get more confidence from that Munster game, even though they lost, because yeah. I think that was their best performance. And you know, they will love this, having a free crack. And look, at the reality is, it's, you know, Leinster bounced back from Toulouse with a decent performance against Connacht, but it wasn't. That team aren't the ones who played against Toulouse. Mm-hmm. So until we see them play in the flesh and see how they've bounced back from it, there's going to be that doubt. And Richie will be a new coach in terms of at the URC level, but he's got a lot of experience and he's very shrewd. And I think he's someone that we will be talking about. You know, what he says and what he does over the next couple of years. And this is a great chance for him to just maybe exploit potential hangover in Leinster's frontline players. Like, it's a massive test for Leinster. It's a massive test for their character to bounce back from, obviously, that heartbreak and win a URC the hard way. I think it's exactly what they need to do, because I think if they had top seed or second seed and being home all the way and they won it, it wouldn't have meant as much as winning it this way will be, if they have to go to the Bulls and come back and go to Munster. Like, that's the very, very good test. And it probably will make it more important for them as into next year, being able to do that, prove you can win knockout games away from home when it really matters. So it's a fascinating 3 weeks for Leinster if they last that long.
I might just stay on Ulster briefly, because I do want to mention the back row. And I know we've spoken about Cormac Isichuku's kind of breakout couple of months in recent weeks on the podcast. But specifically, I even just want to talk about the actual back row trio that seems to have settled there, of Isichuku, David McCann and Nick Timoney. Because I did feel for a couple of years under Dan McFarland, it was one area of the pitch that he never really settled on a specific trio. It seemed like you had Timoney or you had Dwayne Vermeulen at number eight, but Timoney was often jumping between 7 and 8. Then you had you'd have someone like Marcus Ray who'd be in and out of the team, or Greg Jones or someone like that. It always felt like that back row trio was chopping and changing consistently. And the last 5 or 6 weeks with Ulster, Birch, I found that there seems to be a real balance between Timoney at 8, David McCann one side of him, and Cormac Isichuku on the other. And they do seem to be just kind of balancing each other out nicely.
Yeah, it's been a big part of their revival. It's been great to see the two youngsters play alongside Timoney. And Timoney, to be fair, as you say, has been a kind of a constant under Dan and now under Richie. And he's excellent. But it's exciting times for them. Like, they probably will need... I don't think their academy is as strong as Richie or our Ulster fans would like, but it is great to see, you know, for years they were bringing through a lot of young backs, but now you're starting to see some forwards come through, and they're the type of players that he's going to have to build a team around. As he said himself, he's not Man City; they don't have a big checkbook, So it is going to be finding, I suppose, rough diamonds or raw talent, and actually bringing them all the way through from I suppose, first of all, for it to become important players for Ulster, and then eventually to be Irish internationals.
On Leinster then, Johnny. So we spoke about last week's game a little bit, and I think one of the players who really, really stood out and has in the last few weeks since coming back off a fairly long-term injury is Jimmy O'Brien. And against the Ospreys the week before the Champions Cup final, I thought he was absolutely electric. And watching him against Connacht a few days ago again, I just couldn't help but think, God, he could have offered them something in the Champions Cup final. And I know hindsight is such a great thing to be able to use there, but I was just watching him on Friday evening thinking, God, I wonder if he was on the pitch at any stage in Tottenham, would that have made a little bit of a difference?
Yeah, again, it comes back to kind of tactics of that 6-2 split that they have in the makeup of the bench that just knocks Jimmy out because he doesn't, you know, because they've Frawley that covers 10. So, but yeah, he's been in great form. And someone that is like that when he's trying to take every single opportunity he gets. You know, he's a live wire on the ball. I think people probably underestimate kind of how quick he is. And I think his try, you know, his second try just shows what he can do from range. But, you know, and he's, for someone that's not massive, he's very, you know, he's very good defensively, understands the backfield. And then it's his versatility too, you know, what it gives you when he is on the bench, you know, that he covers from 13 out. But that doesn't help him if they do decide to continue that 6-2 split. And someone else has to miss out. But with his form, does that push them to go back to 5-3? And then I suppose what that does, it brings in that conversation around, you know, Frawley then just being kind of second choice 10 for him to come on at that. And then obviously one of the back rows, does that push, you know, maybe, you know, who misses out there then? Does Baird cover the second row, Conan on the bench? You know, what, it's that dynamic and they have to figure that out. But Jimmy's been excellent. And like it was tough, like his injury was tough. It was, you know, a back and neck injury. So, you know, to come back in the form that he's done and not have any ill effects from that has been really, really good to see.
Yeah, is Keenan coming back for any of the playoffs?
As far as I understand, it's undecided.
Yeah, I heard a rumor he could come back for semi-final or final, but it wasn't confirmed.
I initially heard that he could be available for a semi-final or final if needed, but then later on I heard it's probably more unlikely than likely, so I'd say it's quite up in the air.
Well, if he's not back, obviously Jimmy and start a fullback. There's one player that I think we should mention is Tommy O'Brien. I think Tommy O'Brien, if he could just get a run, like he's so good. He's been another player who's had just unfortunate injuries, and like the way he puts his body on the line is, you know, like the attack he made on Prendergast at the weekend. But he's somebody that maybe that if like I could see him actually becoming a starter for Leinster if he gets a little bit of luck and in an area where Leinster are obviously stacked.
I know he's the same age or there, but he might even be a little bit older. Sort of reminds me of Calvin Nash's trajectory, where for quite a few years, just kind of nothing has gone right with niggling injuries and stuff like that. So he certainly is someone who impresses a lot when he plays. And that tackle on Cian Prendergast down in the corner was just absolutely textbook. Two last points on Leinster. First of those, Birch, what were they doing at the line-out on Friday night? I know we spoke last week about how they just played it so safe in the Champions Cup final. And last Friday against Connacht, it was like they just tried to unload every single play they had in the playbook.
Yeah,
mixed effectiveness.
It looked like they would have a big menu, right? And you basically pick plays out of the menu for a match. It's like they basically just put in trick plays and put it and it ended up that's all they had, because every single play to start was complex, and obviously they identified that they wanted to go after Connacht down that 5 meter channel. And in fairness, Heffernan, I think Heffernan did really well. If you remember the one where it was in the bottom corner, where they throw to the front and Foley looks like he's free, but Heffernan basically cheats his way in and it's knocked on. But yeah, and in fairness to Leinster, like there was good detail behind it all, but they made a mess of nearly every one of them at the start. And then in fairness, but again, kind of when they played those breakout plays, when they went away from the 5 meter channel into the 10 meter channel or into the 15 meter channel, they looked so dangerous. I mean, that Scott Penny one at the start, like that's what they should have been doing against Toulouse, because they're as good as anyone there, because they've got such good athletes. It's nearly impossible to get them on the gain line. They're nearly always over the gain line. So yeah, I'd say there's definitely mixed emotions there.
And then the final point, which kind of loops Connacht in on all this, where we've had the Sam Prendergast conversation for a couple of weeks now, and it does appear in the last few days that Sam Prendergast specifically to Connacht is looking more unlikely than likely over the coming months. It does seem, though, that Connacht are still trying to stay in some sort of hope of getting an out half from Leinster. And Birch, does that open the possibility for I don't know, a Kieran Frawley or potentially Harry Byrne to go out west for a time next season?
Look, Leinster have to play ball in this situation because they have the four of them under contract. Unless the IRFU really, you know, show muscle and actually say, this is actually what's best for Irish rugby, and you know, put a squeeze on them. So Leinster are under no obligation to anybody go, because obviously they've already budgeted for all of them. I would say of the four, it's probably Harry Byrne. You would imagine that's the most vulnerable. Although to be fair, I think two parts of this is one is who would Leinster be willing to give up for a year, and see it as part of potentially that player being a better player for Leinster long term. It's who would the IRFU feel would benefit from playing more, and could that help, you know, Andy Farrell for the Six Nations the year after next, or the World Cup in Australia. And then who actually has the real drive to want to go? You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing as well. Like, there's a lot of Leinster players who wouldn't jump at a chance to go to Connacht. And there's been opportunities for lots of them over the last 7-8 years. And they've just decided to stay. The difference now is that probably, under Joe Schmidt, was if they were staying, they were getting Champion Cup medals and URC medals. Now they're not at the moment. They may get one in a couple of weeks, but they're not getting Champions Cup medals at the moment by being squad players. There's still the challenge is for the other provinces. You can still get picked for Ireland by being a bench player for Leinster. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's lots of examples of that. And there will be lots of examples probably over next year or two. But it's which of those, do any of those 10s really want to play every week? The four we mentioned, obviously. And are they happy to go down to Connacht and prove that they can help Connacht and perform in a worse team? Like, let's be honest, the Connacht squad, you know, we saw it at the weekend, like that was a second string Leinster team and Connacht were blown away, and a lot of people would get spooked by that. You know, do I want to be in a team where it's not easy? Like, it's easy in Leinster, like I think Leo's win rate 75% in the URC. It's easy to look good in a team that are way better than everybody else most weeks. So that's the challenge. And I don't know which of those 10s, Johnny knows Sam better than I do, but I would imagine Sam wouldn't back away from that challenge. But would the other three, would any of them want it? I don't know.
And the other part of it then, Johnny, as well, is from Leinster's point of view, it's tough for them to make a call on releasing an out half before they know what has happened on Ireland's tour of South Africa, where if, for example, Ross Byrne goes on that, or Frawley or Harry Byrne or whoever, or even Sam Prendergast goes on it, and one of them picks up an injury for a few months, all of a sudden their numbers are a little bit more thin heading into the new season. And you only have to look back at Munster at the start of this season to see how quickly those injuries can catch up on you and those little numbers can catch up on you, where this time 12 months ago, Munster were in a situation where they had Jack Crowley, Joey Carberry and Ben Healy, and you know, they had too many out halves. And 2 months into this season, they only had one fit out half because Ben Healy had gone and Joey Carberry was injured, and all of a sudden Tony Butler was in there as a rookie. It's tough for Leinster to make a call on that at this stage.
Yeah, it is. And I think, as Bert said, it comes down to who wants to go grasp that opportunity playing week in, week out. And like even this season, you look at someone like Max Deegan, who had the opportunity, you know, was highly touted that he was going to be going to Ulster, but he stayed. And, you know, that's what the environment that Leinster have created, the opportunity to win medals. Yes, they haven't won in the last couple of years, but they do give themselves those opportunities. So I'm not sure how it's going to play out. Someone's going to have to make a decision, be it a player, you know, the province or the IRFU, and it's going to have to be made over the next couple of weeks, because when the squad is announced to go to South Africa, whoever is not in is going to have to report for pre-season, you know, in 4 weeks time in July. So they have to, and that uncertainty doesn't help any player, or, you know, it creates confusion. So I think they have to have clarity on that, whether it is going to happen or not. I think it should be a case that, you know, one of them should go, and then they need to nail the colours to the mast on first, second, third choice, and guys then need to, you know, knuckle down and try and rob that jersey off whoever's in front of them, or hold on to the jersey from whoever's behind them.
Yeah. Can I just say something on this, Neil? Yes. And like, I'm not like, first of all, I think we'll get a better idea of what Leinster see as the pecking order when we see the team this weekend, because you would imagine URC quarterfinal, when they've lost the Champions Cup, they're going to go full strength. Okay, so we get a better idea of what that pick, who the number 110 is. Is it Ross Byrne? Is it Frawley? This weekend, and that'll be interesting to follow. I also don't blame Leinster. These are four homegrown, Leinster 10s. Mm-hmm. But it's a very unique scenario, because if this was Saracens having four 10s or Toulouse having four 10s, I think there would be less about it, right? But the difference is, Toulouse probably couldn't do it because they couldn't afford it. Okay, so that's our Saracens either, because of the salary caps. So it doesn't necessarily play out like that in England or in France. And then secondly, there's not that bigger picture where you only have four teams. And as unfortunately, the other Connacht at the moment, next year, are starting with just Jack Carty. So you have a compelling need. Is that Connacht's fault? Not really. JJ Hanlon had a horrific injury. So they, both Jack Carty and JJ Hanlon, were contracted for next year. So there's a circumstance which has just created an opportunity where you would say one of those 10s could play a lot next year in another province on loan or a transfer or whatever. And that would obviously help another province. And that would obviously help. And the inverse of this is, I actually think it helps Leinster. I think it helps Leinster by not having to give all of them little bits of game time here and there. And maybe it'll actually help Leinster win a European Cup by 1-10, playing a little bit more. Because the other argument, it's not for today, is, you know, our policy of protecting our internationals, it's not leading to European Cups. It's not leading to World Cups. Okay, we've won 2 Six Nations, which is brilliant. But, like, our strategic goals are to be winning Europe a lot more regularly than we are as well. And you look at those French, the Toulouse or La Rochelle players, they don't get protected that much. Of course, Raj or Ugo Mola at certain times looks after them. But it's dog eat dog in their leagues, in the top 14. And so there's all kinds of things that we need to think about. But just to be clear, I don't blame Leinster. And I actually think maybe letting one go could actually help Leinster more. Because, if, for example, if it's Harry that goes, You know, Sam plays more, right? Mm-hmm. Ross plays more,
and Harry plays more,
100%. Or if Sam goes, and it's a loan deal, well, in 12 months' time, maybe he's ready to come in and start. Like that's the scenario. It's just difficult. And don't forget, there's less clashes now with international rugby as well. So it's not the same as it was 2 or 3 years ago, where they got to play a lot anyway. So yeah, it's and again, it's not Leinster's fault, but it's a scenario that I think if we're thinking with, you know, helicopter view of Irish rugby, we have to discuss it. Or not us, we can discuss it all we want, but it has to be discussed by people who actually can make the decision.
Yeah, and then obviously like Connacht they've been given dispensation to bring in an NIQ out half if needed. But when you potentially have an Irish qualified one ready and available for a short term move, it's hard to stack it up all like that. Final word then, guys, on the podcast on it's tough to sum it all up, but Connacht as a whole going into this off season now, where it was a season that started out really, really well for them, 3 wins in a row, and lost heavily in a few games towards the end of the season. But I think ultimately that's not where this season has fallen apart. It was games that they were in with a shout of winning and let slip, or in with a shout of getting bonus points in and let slip. And they're losing a lot of experience over this summer, Johnny. They're bringing in a lot of inexperienced players. It's they're heading into a fairly uncertain time, I would say.
Yeah, they're probably a bit of a rebuild there in terms of even coaching staff, you know, new coaching staff this year. They started with such a bang. They play a great brand of rugby. But like they lost 5 games by less than 4 points. Mm. You know, like that's when you're, you know, they're, you know, 5 points off playoffs, 9 points off European qualification. Like they're going to look back on that with kind of through gritted teeth, and they'll have a bit of regret in those really tight games. Like they lost to Ulster away by a point, Leinster at home by 2 points. But I think the two that probably, you know, the Stormers at home when they were, you know, pushing for qualification, that's one that probably hurts them in terms of how inaccurate they were, particularly at long out time. And when they had opportunities to go and win that game and win it convincingly to a point, but they just were, and I think that's probably the tale. It was just that, that level of consistency when it mattered, particularly in the 22 zone, that's going to hurt them. But, you know, their launch plays have improved. They've scored some brilliant tries. They've, it's just turning the dial, and they're actually like 50-50, lost 9-1-9. It's how they change that dial just to tip it in their favor. They've brought through some good homegrown talent through the academies, which, you know, we spoke about before, you know, Eric, Sebastian down there also, you know, obviously Mark Sexton, who's now senior coach, he's had a lot to do with that over the development over the last couple of years. And they've signed a couple of their own homegrown into academy this year, in the last couple of weeks. And yeah, but there is a lot of experience going. So it's that transition, how they manage that, and they manage to try and tip it in their favor so that they're in that top eight next year.
Bernard, I'll give you the final word on Connacht over what is the goal for them over the next, I suppose, 8-12 weeks leading into the new season?
Try and convince the board or the CEO to let them spend some money, because I don't think their squad is, I think the squad's weaker than this year's, and they've obviously missed out on what they want. It was a World Cup year, so it was easier for them. You know, they had a great start, but some of the teams they were playing were affected by the World Cup. So I love the fact they're bringing through young players, but in my experience, those young players tend to thrive a little bit better when there's a little bit more experience and quality around them. So I think they're 2 or 3 players short. 10 obviously is a key one. But I think they've cut too many too quickly without real, like Hugh Gavin, for example, he looks like he could be a great player for them. But I'd rather see a lot more of him next year, and then start to bring him through instead of someone more experienced. So, Mac Hansen obviously being back, Santi Cordero will be a boost to them. But overall, I just think they're lacking the quality that they need to get into the European Cup next year. It's nothing to do with coaching. It's just playing personnel isn't as strong as it needs to be.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it's going to be a season of transition for Connacht. That is all we have time for on the RT Rugby podcast this afternoon. A reminder: Munster and the Ospreys is live on RT2 and RT Player this Friday evening from Thomond Park, 7:35 kickoff. There's commentary as well on RT Radio 1 Extra. And then you can also get live updates on Saturday Sport on RT Radio 1 of the Leinster and Ulster game at the Aviva Stadium from 5 o'clock. On Saturday. Johnny and Birch, thanks a million for joining us, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you.